Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Football Friday, playoff style. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, thanks for listening. You just heard the injury roundup there. Sal Capaccio is often the first to know, outside of whatever Sean McDermott knows or whoever he's told when Sean comes on WGR mid-mornings on Fridays, and such was the case today. Sal, we knew no Max Hairston in the game. Before we go past that, how big a loss is he? I mean, we've had plenty of time spent on why, how he was on the field and how it happened that he was injured. How much will the Bills miss him?
First of all, can I just diverge for 1 second? I'm over here laughing because of what you just said about how, like, you know, I'm the first person to know, you know, other than what Sean McDermott says because I'm in the media. I have to just quite tell you guys a quick story. You'll appreciate this. So maybe about a month and a half ago. So what happens is the McDermott meets with the rest of the media, local media, after he's on the radio with me, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes and so, but they get their initial information off of the interview with me. And they tweet it out, which is great. And somebody, one of our media friend colleagues, says to me about a month and a half ago, oh, yeah, you got McDermott on tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, this is about a while ago. And say, yeah, well, you know, somebody said that they told you, like, mean they, like, people, Odyssey, bosses, whoever, like, they told you you have to wait till the end to ask them about injuries, you know, to keep people on and keep them on and keep people in suspense. And I'm like, well, number one, That did not happen. Like, nobody's ever told me.
No, we'd actually have to have some kind of meetings for that to happen.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, what are you talking about? I'm like, they pretty much trust that I'm going to handle it the right way. And number two, why wouldn't I wait? Like, I'm not going to come out, hey, Sean, give me the injury report. Let's go. And then everybody stops tuning in. Like, right. This is radio. That's what we do, right? Like,
right.
Why would I not ask them three or four questions to get people to continue to listen in?
Anyway. Makes sense to us, I think. I speak for Mike.
I would hope so. I don't know. I just thought it was funny because you're like, he tells you first. I'm like, yeah. And I wait a few questions. Plus, you know, you guys do this for a living. You interview people. You're like, you get somebody on the air and you it's like you start your show and you get into the flow a little bit. I like to ask Sean a few questions about, you know, what's going on in life or what's going on with the team and last week. And then, hey, why don't we do the injury report? You know, so That's what happens every week. It's just so funny. It reminded me of that. I just thought it was kind of weird.
It's different than what they do. This is different than what they do. The press conferences are often frustrating to me because I don't think that many of the people asking him questions really care what his answers are. They really are not trying to find anything out. They're asking questions about what it means about your team or just sort of, they want sound bites. And as long as he talks for 45 seconds after they're done talking, it's a win. But it's not really telling us anything interesting about the game or a decision. You know, there are some questions like that too. But yeah, I mean, they're playing. They're in different roles than we are.
Right, we have different jobs. Yeah,
we have different jobs.
And look, I'm not naive enough to know that I understand that, like, when people are listening to my interview with Sean McDermott, most just want the goods. They want the injury report. I totally get that, right? But I'm in a position where I got to have this one-on-one conversation with him on the phone, so I'm not going to just start firing that off. And by the way, that would be terrible for radio. Like, I just don't want to do that. I do want people to actually listen to the interview.
It would turn the whole thing into just transactional. Like, here's the injury report. We're done. Thanks for calling. Like, whatever.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and you don't want to do that. Now, to get to today's injury report, he did immediately say and rule out in that part of the conversation that Max Hairston is going to be out for the game. And Mike, you asked how big of a loss. I do think it's a big loss. It's a notable loss. Now, from this standpoint, the Bills, they don't normally start Max Hairston now, right? It's Tre'Davious White. And honestly, Trey White's played pretty well, really well. Hairston doesn't play a ton, but they do rotate sometimes. But the reason why I think it's notable and big is the Bills have had a pivot with Max Hairston if they've wanted to go with matchups if a team is hurting them with speed. And they don't have that in this game.
Right.
If the Jags start to put guys on the field, a lot of guys, and spread the field and say, okay, now, you know, you're going to have to cover all these guys and we have speed with Parker Washington and all that, and the Bills, you know, they start getting beat, they don't have a pivot to say, let's put Max Harrison in for Tre'Davious White. Because early on, when Max Harrison started playing, why did he play that first game against the Chiefs? I think it was because we all knew, like, they need some speed. You know, he had an interception against them, and that was a big deal. They don't have that in this game. And Dane, right. Dane Jackson represents a nice floor for them, which is veteran, understands the defense, knows where to be, when to be there. But he doesn't have the ceiling to be able to keep up with the athleticism maybe the other teams can present.
Yeah, I feel like Harrison is a considerable loss. I mean, it's good that Tre'Davious White has played, I think, as well as he has down the stretch, and you've got Benford healthy. So it's not like it's glaring, but yeah, I feel like there would have been a role for him. You know, if nothing else, maybe to just chase Brian Thomas Jr. around. I mean, not that right. the Bills are in the business of doing that, but like speed-wise, he's the I don't need to see Tre'Davious White chasing Brian Thomas Jr. down the field. Like, I don't think that's going to end well.
That's right, but, you know, the Bills, as you guys know, play a lot of zone. Now, they play right. more man-to-man this year, but they're a zone defense. They keep everything in front of them. I think they really trust their own system anyway, even when they went against, like, Chase and Higgins and those guys. Like, yeah, I mean, they're going to get theirs a little bit, but we're keeping everything in front of us. We're not getting beat. The Bills' main mantra, since Sean McDermott has been hired and the head coach of this team in 2017, a defensive-minded coach, the main mantra that comes out of that room and that group is, do not give up explosives. And they have been the best team in the league pretty much over that time period of not giving up explosives, including this year, which I still think is an amazing stat. A friend of mine just texted me and said, did you really say that as a stat? Is that right? Here's the stat. The Bills have given up one 40-yard pass play this year. Exactly 40 yards of busted coverage of Kansas City. No other team has given up. Every other team has given up more than one 40-plus yard pass play this year. It's just how they're built. So no matter what speed the other team has, the Bills are very confident to keep players in front of them.
Hollywood Brown, 40 yards.
Yep. Right.
And it was exactly 40 yards.
He didn't score on that.
And right. he didn't score. It wasn't more. It wasn't even more than that, or a touchdown. It was exactly 40 yards. And there were other right. close ones. We talked about this a few weeks ago. There were other, like, high 30s. Brian Thomas, yeah. what are we doing with him here? Like, so, fabulous, huge rookie season. This year, just okay. 700 yards, two touchdowns. For Brian Thomas,
Lots of drops.
It's Myers, who they traded for, who's like a version of Shakir, maybe better, but he's like a possession receiver type. Parker Washington in the slot. He's interesting, but he's kind of come out of nowhere here in recent weeks, had some huge games. And then there's just over there on the side is Brian Thomas, who that's a little bit daunting that you have this guy who's been right. so prolific in his career, but has just had a disappointing second year, I think, is easily safe to say. What's he worth in this game?
You might know this more than me, Mike, without looking into it. I haven't dug into it, but because, you know, you probably look at some stats a little closer, like even fantasy-wise, which isn't Thomas a little bit better in the second half of the season maybe this year? Has he been a little bit better? Maybe not volume, but more consistent, I guess. You know, more reliable, I guess.
Yeah, he never became a good play in fantasy, but
right.
it wasn't as bad necessarily, yeah. but...
Yeah, the beginning of the year was terrible.
Yeah, I think it's in conjunction with the trade for Jacoby Myers. I really do. I think that since Jacoby Myers, who, by the way, Sean McDermott brought him up again today on the Extra Point Show.
Wow, like he can't quit.
You know, talking about he mentioned him and Greg Newsome, them acquiring them at the trade deadline and how well they've helped their team. And, you know, I think that it's fair to wonder, like, if all these times he's brought it up or talked, is he saying, hey, they improved their team, and, you know, we didn't improve our roster mm-hmm. from a trade standpoint, right, and mentioning how other teams did. I'm not sure, but I think it's fair to wonder about that from people who've done that. Since Jacoby Myers has been inserted, it just feels like everything flows better for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That includes Brian Thomas Jr., that includes Parker Washington, that includes Brenton Strange, who really, you know, he's had a few injuries in his career, but now when he's healthy, he's been really good. Washington does move around a little bit. He doesn't exclusively play the slot. You say, what do you want to do with Brian Thomas Jr.? I don't think that's a guy you have to necessarily run around and put Christian Benford on him every play. But I do think it's a guy you need to be aware of. But the trick is, right, when you have a team like that and they have a lot of these weapons that you can spread around, if you do put one guy on him, that's going to leave another guy free in some other ways. So it's a tricky proposition.
I'm sort of chuckling to myself, a little more inside baseball, if you will, from what you let off with here, Sal, about how you handle McDermott. As you're talking here about their receiving core and, you know, how they've gotten hot, I'm thinking to myself, man, I think I just saw a clip of Jeremy and Joe talking to someone about how Cohen does what McVay used to do with Goff when they were together at the Rams. And I'm thinking, like, who was it? I want to mention it here. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, it was you. It was Sal. Yeah. So tell everybody what you said to them this morning about the communication and what maybe McDermott and Babich and the defense in general could maybe capitalize on, if that's not too strong a word, sort of changing looks at the last minute.
Yeah, I like it, the inside baseball. I do think this is the game within the game. I think this is a very big key component of this game, which is the Jacksonville Jaguars do with Cohen and Lawrence a lot of what McVay did with Goff, where they don't huddle, he gets up to the line, and he talks to him in his headset and his helmet until there's 15 seconds left on the play clock, because that's the rule when it gets shut off. He kind of gives them the answers to the test, so to speak. He says, okay, they're in this front, they're in odd, they have, you know, watch out for the linebacker over here, we got a good play here, stick with it. Hey, you need to change up the front, you need to change the protection, whatever it is, he's getting that from Leon Cohen. And it doesn't mean that he's not smart enough to understand that stuff himself, but what it does mean is once it gets to 14 seconds, now he's, all right, got everything that Leon Cohen told him. The Bills know this, right? They know this. And once you get to 14, that's when you might start to play around with things, change things a little bit. It gets under 10 seconds pre-snap, you move safeties around, you move a linebacker, and you start and you blitz from a different spot than what he thought, because what he's hearing from Leon Cohen that he's seeing then becomes a different picture before the snap. And I do think, because the Bills have been so good at this over the years with Sean McDermott, granted a lot of times, most of the times with Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, but now Poyer's back, you've got Cole Bishop. You know, I just think that's something that the Bills will maybe have to turn to in this game if they want to try to figure out how to, I don't know, make a big play or flip the script a little bit here.
I did hear also, and I don't have data on this, I just know I heard an interview, maybe it was with One Bills Live, mentioning how that they will go fast sometimes, Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's to avoid what you're talking about, right? Like, I wonder how often they snap the ball at 15 or close to 15 seconds and not give a defense time to do that, like to try to change it up on them.
I think it's absolutely part of the equation. You know, as I just said, that the Bills know they do that. They know the Bills know they do that, right? So they're going to say, okay, there it is. Let's get into play. Let's just snap. That's the play we want. We don't want the defense to change the look right there. And absolutely, I do think that they'll do that. Plus, I mean, they do have a really well-balanced offense. Now, their run game is – Travis Etienne's good. The issue with the run game is the Bills' defense. It's not Jacksonville, what they can do. This is not – the Baltimore Ravens running the ball. They have not had over 4.2 yards a carry since a game in October. Every game since then has been 4.2 or less, and that's not a big number. But if they get rolling on with their running game, that's when they become even more dangerous in the passing game, because then they'll start to do stuff out of play action, and you know that's what the Bills have to take care of and really try to button up on here. When the Bills say, we're going to stop the run first, I think it sounds like a crazy thing to people because, well, wait a minute, you got Trevor Lawrence and look how good they are in the passing game. I still think the Bills want to stop the running game first, because then if they become one-dimensional and they say, we're just not going to be able to run the football, then you can start doing those other things.
Wonder if Jacksonville might shift toward Bashal Tootin, the rookie running back in this game, a little bit. Etienne is, in a few different seasons, kind of looked like, by the numbers at least, worn out. And Tootin coming back from an injury, probably the more athletic, explosive back at his young age, handled some goal line stuff for them. And this will probably happen because I drafted the hell out of Bashal Tootin this year and he hardly did anything. So now that the season is over, here it comes.
That's right. Yeah, there you go.
Sal Capaccio on the West Shore Hotline. All of that about the Jaguars scripting plays and, or not scripting plays, but, you know, talking
headset,
in the huddle and everything, I'm sure it was not meant as a Joe Brady tweet. But I wonder about Brady here in this game, Sal, what you think maybe his job is in this game, what he needs to do best. Because it's not just Sean McDermott or Brandon Bean that we're going to be fixated on next week if they don't come home with a win here. Mm-hmm. It's Brady, too. Like, he's not everybody's favorite. He did get, finally, a mention or an interview request, right? Baltimore now has asked for him, and I thought it was interesting. This morning I was thinking about how I hadn't heard anything like that yet from him, and you hear a lot of names. So what might be, in your opinion, the thing that he needs to do best Sunday?
I did an interview in a Baltimore station this morning because of that, and it was on video, and there was the people in the chat box, you know, the bullpen, so to speak, for them. And there were a lot of Ravens fans like, no, I don't want him, I don't want him. And, you know, I think he's a polarizing guy right now because Josh didn't have quite the year he had last year, and people see that. But they're still, you know, number four in the league in scoring points. And I think his job in this game is to make sure there's a pivot if the Jacksonville Jaguars really slow down the run game. Now, I know the Jags are number one rushing defense. I totally get that. But the Bills are going to do what they do. They're going to be who they are. They're still going to try and run the ball. I don't think the Bills are going to come out in this game and say, we're going to suddenly change our identity and become this team that throws the ball 40 times. They don't want to live like that. They want to give the ball to James Cook and stay on schedule and have third and short. That's how the Bills are going to have to make their living. And if the Jags start to really slow that down, then what's the pivot? His job is to have a pivot ready to be able to really be able to do something in the passing game that can kind of make something work to allow the running game to continue to go. I think the other part of it is his job in this game is to make sure that Josh Allen kind of is at the best version of himself, I guess, right? Settling in, whatever. You know, you go back in some games that we've talked about over the years, and I don't know if I can give you one off the top of my head, but what's the book on Josh sometimes where he gets so amped up early in the game? Early in the game, he's so amped up that, you know, maybe he needs to get hit a little bit. He said before he might need to, you know, get hit a little bit. Or you want to give him an early throw. You want to give him an early, really early success where he can feel good. Last year, the AFC Championship game, the Bills went 3-and-out. They started the game with, I think, 3 straight passes. They were incomplete, and they had to punt the ball. And, like, I think you want to do something early in this game to establish that you can be a little bit more settled in control.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline with us here for just a couple of more minutes in advance of Sunday's wild card game in Jacksonville for the Bills. Sal, what's your best guess? I mean, we know Palmer is questionable, so that'll probably go right up to Sunday. Maybe the practice squad elevations at 4 o'clock tomorrow will tell us something. Like, for instance, if Mecole Hardman gets elevated, then you might have your answer. And that would answer this question, too, about Keon Coleman. Like, how do you feel about Coleman? I mean, the practice squad elevations are probably going to be, you know, there's only the two, and they've got whatever needs at linebacker maybe or elsewhere.
Running back,
right, if Ty Johnson isn't right. So I don't know how, you know, liberally they can just call Hardman up. What do you think about Coleman in this spot? If do you think he gets called on?
Boy, it's a tough, tough call. If Joshua Palmer can't go, that puts you at, what, 5 eligible receivers, right?
Right.
Shakir. Yeah, Brandon Cooks, because Brandon Cooks play. Gabe Davis, I think. You're looking at 5 wide receivers, Tyrell Shavers. And I could see a world where they could just roll with 5. I don't think they have to have a 6th, especially because with Dalton Kincaid now healthy and off the injury report, I think you could really lean into 3 tight ends. You could lean into your 13 personnel if you want at times. So, no, I don't think that even with Josh Palmer, it's a slam dunk that Keon Coleman gets called upon. And I wouldn't be surprised if Mecole Hardman was elevated for this game for this reason, especially if Palmer can't go. Yes, to help replace, then you have a receiver, you have an option, and you're going to want to have another threat downfield. You know, the Bills would like to have another, you know, speed element. You have Cooks right there. But, guys, if Palmer can't go and you are going to go with 5 receivers, how much risk do you want to put on Khalil Shakir returning punts and putting that on his plate too? Because if something were to happen to Khalil Shakir, now suddenly you're really down wide receivers. So I think it's a dicey proposition to have 5 plus Coleman, because then you'd have Khalil Shakir returning punts still. I think you have to think about that aspect of it. And honestly, he's the 6 out of 6 guys right now. And it just doesn't feel like they trust him. That really what it comes to, that's the word. It's just trust. It doesn't feel like they trust him right now.
Yeah, I think if you're in a win or go home situation, it would really say a lot, right? If Palmer isn't there, you're right. There's just the 4: Shaver, Shakir, Davis, Cooks. Those are your 4. You want a 5th. If they elevate Hardman to take that 5th spot instead of Coleman, I mean, that just really says it all. And I would respect it. Like I understand why they don't trust him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you can't do the things off the field that you need to do, then it's hard to trust you on the field. And I'm not saying anything happened since we know things have happened off the field with, you know, him being benched early in the season, but it was multiple times, you know, going back to that time. And I just think that that has to be part of the equation that you think about, you know, and hey, if he's been doing everything right, then sure. But the production hasn't quite been there as well. And how much does Josh trust him, right? It's a numbers game. Given all of the scenarios that we're talking about here, guys, with Prater's injury, with Terrell Bernard being out, with Ty Johnson being questionable, it's hard for me to get to Keon Coleman getting a jersey because I just think you're going to have to probably elevate other people at other positions in the 48-game day roster is going to have to look differently, is going to have to look a certain way probably without him. It's possible. I just don't see it right now.
Sounds right to me. Quickly, DeMar Hamlin didn't make it back?
No, he didn't. They're not going to activate him for this game. He has been ruled out. Max Harrison has been ruled out. And Terrell Bernard has been ruled out. And the reason I brought him up, guys, so everybody bumps up a rung. So that means Joe Andreessen becomes your main starting, your main backup middle linebacker behind Shaq Thompson. He's questionable. He will play, Sean McDermott said. And therefore, you might need Keontae Jenkins or Baylen Spector to fill the special teams roles.
That's one of those. Daquan Jones is, I think, a big one for the practice squad call-ups. Because if he's not there, then maybe that's Jones Jr., I think, if I've got the right name. So, there's a lot.
I like the way he's played, by the way. I like the way that Jones Jr. has played. I think he's given good special teams reps. And I think he's given you a few good snaps on defense. And I think Fedarian Mathis has given snaps on defense. So what we thought the defensive line group would look like a couple months ago rolling into playoffs is certainly not, I think, what it looks like right now. But I actually think that it might be a little bit better than, you know, what the given scenarios would be if you'd said that.
This is Andre Jones?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sal, thanks for your time. Enjoy your Friday night and your trip to Jacksonville.
All right. You too, guys. We'll talk on Monday, hopefully, about what's coming up next weekend.
Yes, man. All right. Sounds good. There's Sal Capaccio. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet, Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Did you see that Al Michaels is back next year?
I did.
Love it.
So
let's go.
Is it tomorrow night that they got?
Yes.
That won't be his last game. He'll be back for 26.
Let's go.
I saw that. Yeah.
We'll have another shot at him.
That's right.
I hope.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's 80. Good news. Possibly the top two NFL picks in the draft, top two picks in the NFL draft meeting tonight in the college playoff semifinal. Mendoza and Moore, the quarterbacks for Indiana and Oregon, respectively. Are we picking that game, or is it just the six NFLs?
Just the NFLs. I'm not prepared to pick that game.
No, I don't want to be unprepared to do it. It would be very different than usual.
I would have read a lot.
Really?
I would have talked to all my Indiana and Oregon people.
We did talk to Sam, and he's like, Oregon.
Yeah.
That's not enough for your process?
No.
All right, that's fine.
I'm more thorough.
Picks coming up at 6.
You hear the first segment where I had all that information on Liam Cohen?
Yes.
I dig deep.
You worked toward, you got an attitude, you got your dander up about him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's healthy. That's sports right there.
That's what we're here for.
803-0550 for your calls. We'll look for you until 6. Then we'll have our picks for the weekend. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. It's Football Friday on WGR.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
Personally, I love playing on the road. Going into someone else's stadium, they're loud fans that bring the energy. It's easy to get amped up for those games. So I know our fans always travel well, but I think there's just a few little extra things preparation-wise that go into playing away, like doing silent snap counts, little nuanced things like that. But I wouldn't say there's a huge, huge difference between the preparation that we actually do going into a away game as opposed to a home game.
Dawson Knox, Bills at Jaguars Sunday. Knox has had some playoff moments. He has 6 touchdown catches in his career in the postseason. None last year, but one or more in each of the previous 4 seasons. So And that's up on the list, right? Once in a while, we've looked at that list of the Allen-era touchdown receivers, and Knox is like maybe second or third. It's up there.
He's been here for the whole run, right? I mean, I think what,
19.
19, right, okay. Yeah, he gets the first touchdown, what is the score, 9-0 in the first AFC title game?
2020.
He scores that first one, I think, if I remember right.
I think that's right. It was it 2-0 and then 9-0?
Yeah, right, and there was a botched punt or something that gave the Bills great field position. Either that wasn't the safety. I think they got the touchdown right off of that.
I think so. Right. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, thank you for confirming. It can get dusty in there. I think I got that.
Knox caught Allen's first touchdown pass in the playoffs in his career against Indianapolis.
Houston? Oh, Indianapolis. Okay.
Yeah, I guess he didn't throw one in the Houston game. Yeah.
He caught one in the Houston game.
Yes. Knox against the Colts, then against the Chiefs, like you just said, then against New England twice the next year when it was freezing. Then once against Miami in that playoff win, wild card win, and then once against Pittsburgh. So, 6, pretty good. Let's go to John here. Hi, John.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Good, John. Thanks for calling.
Hey, got a quick question for you, and I want to get your opinion. So, how much of an impact do you think offense and defense, how important it is to dominate on those in the first quarter, or at least the first series of the game? And I just would be interested to see, to really put a stamp on what the Bills want to do for that game and just make that impact. And I'd be interested to see what you guys thought.
Well, it's never bad.
Right.
It's a very, any sport, you know, like get ahead.
Dominate might be a lot to ask, but yeah, I mean, you'd like to have a good start.
Ryan Fitzpatrick made this point. We played a clip yesterday of him saying how he thought it was especially important for the Bills to start well. It's also every Sabres game when it's previewed is that they should start well. It's probably good. I don't know if they have to do it.
But it
might be the kind of team, in fairness, it might be the kind of team where it's more important than other teams.
Jacksonville, you mean like the
Bills?
Okay. I thought you meant with their inexperience, like, you know, punch them early. And
well, maybe that.
Yeah.
Maybe that. That was part of Fitzpatrick's point.
Right.
Make Lawrence think about it. Make him sweat.
They're new at all this kind of thing, kind of.
But these losses, like Miami, Atlanta, Houston, if not others, Philadelphia, they're down 13-0 midway through the fourth quarter.
They were down 16-0 in Miami into the fourth quarter in that game.
Yeah, I mean, the pressure is on, and they did threaten in those games. What's the other loss? New England. I mean, that was more of a back-and-forth game.
Right.
But they did threaten in those games. They just, you know, didn't get there. And, yeah, I mean, you don't want to live like that Sunday. You don't want to be down, obviously. You don't want to be down 2 scores and have to maybe get out of your game plan or just sort of be thinking at all about what there is to lose.
I mean, need it be said, the thing that's most imperative is to not have it be hot and cold, you know, one half to the other. I mean, we sat through the Cleveland game. I mean, we never really sat with it. You were off for post game that day, and then by the time we were back running again on Monday, it was like the game hardly even happened, I think, because it was on to the next thing. But they started, they're 21, they were up in that game, they started hot, and then they were asleep for the rest of the game. So that doesn't really work either, right? It was like the opposite of what had happened in New England when they got buried early, down 21-0, and then stormed back and won the game. So, I mean, you'd like to just avoid, you know, I don't expect them to score every time they have the ball, although they have done that in the playoffs. You know, just a few years ago now, that New England game, that did happen.
I'll tell you what, if you're not done.
I'm done.
There's this point, and this is, I think, part of John's take and maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick's and maybe most people. We had a caller earlier, you know, first playoff game for Liam Cohen. How many is it for Lawrence? Like 3? He's 1-1 in his playoff career. Yep. Beat the Chargers and lost in Kansas City. Like you might think their inexperience is in your favor. And I just don't. I mean, I don't even care if it's the Bills who are, when they got into the playoffs with Allen in the first place, and other teams might have had more experience than they did. I don't care. I mean, it can affect anybody individually, and I won't know, and they won't even know themselves how it will affect right. them until it happens. But I just do not think of this way. I mean, this is more of like Aaron Schatz's school of football analysis. I don't think playoff games are really different. They're more famous. There's more at stake. But I just don't think most professionals are going to be like, ah! And maybe late in the game, you miss a throw. How does Allen miss the throw to Shakir against Philadelphia? Even Allen, right? Like, maybe there's an element of nerves that comes into play. But I'll tell you, the guys, and I want to include Allen in this, even though there have been some incredible losses along the way. We're like, how? This has come up this week as well. I want to think of Trevor Lawrence, Josh Allen, anybody on this level. Think about their lives. Think about Lawrence's life. Just the national championship game. You know, the scrutiny of the 101 pick and all of it. Is he likely to be the type of guy that gets scared because it's a wild card game? Or is he maybe the type of guy who will rise to it? This is true of Allen on a different level. It's not really this game for Allen. It might be in 2 weeks if the Bills make it that far. But like, this is why I'm here. If I can't come up big in this game, I've got no place being here.
Right.
I mean, it's a wild card home game. If I cower to that, I should just quit. Like, this is what we've worked for. I mean, it's going to sound like I'm in a locker room or something, but this is the whole point. I mean, do these guys get scared in this moment, or do they feel like, well, this is the game that matters. Like, this is when it matters. What we did all year was for this. And not that you'll have your best game necessarily, but I also think, you know, once you get on the field, how would I know? But this is just, I think, how it works. I think they mostly patronize reporters when they take questions about pressure and all this. Like, they just kind of tell you what they want to hear, maybe, and make it sound like it's, you know, a bigger deal. This is like, when you're on the field and the ball is snapped, is there anywhere in your mind where it's like, this is the playoffs? When you got the ball in your hands and you're looking for an open target, are you at all possibly thinking about like what round we're in the tournament, or what week this is, or no? Yeah. I don't think so. So not everybody's at their best in the biggest games. I'm not saying everybody has to be, but there's a supposition that a team like this that has very limited experience in the playoffs would be at a disadvantage. I just don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, nobody is ever in the history of, well, I shouldn't say it that definitively, but I can't think of an athlete that would tell you, yeah, actually, I got scared. I was nervous.
They won't tell you that.
you're never going to hear it.
But they will tell you that it's there. Like, most guys won't just tell you.
That the pressure's there.
They won't say what I'm saying.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You're just playing. Maybe they would. Maybe some guys would.
Yeah. Well, for what it's worth, I mean, you mentioned 1-1, right? I mean, the last time these guys were in the playoffs, now they lost the next week, but Lawrence threw three picks in the first quarter of that game against the Chargers. So, and what was his reaction to that? They came back from 27-0 down to win 31-30. And he had a, you know, relatively huge game, 28-47, four touchdowns to go with the four picks. So I don't have the yardage total. Oh, 288.
How about that?
He rallied three picks in the first quarter of a playoff game. So, you know, if you're looking, you know, this is to the caller's point about fast starts, right? I'm thinking about taking the ball away from this guy. Hopefully I can confuse him. He's letting it rip and trusting what he sees. And this thing about the headset and the coach talking to him, and if McDermott can confuse him and, you know, whatever. But you're not going to be home free because you ding him. This is a guy who threw...
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Through three in the first quarter and then through four touchdowns and a comeback. So
and there was a fourth pick
and that,
later?
Yeah, there was.
How about that?
Three were in the first quarter, and then where did the second quarter down 24-0 is the fourth one.
He threw four picks in the first half.
Four picks in the first half.
Stayed in.
And then threw three touchdowns. I think he had one before the half ended. Yeah. He made it 27-7 before the half ended with a touchdown pass and then threw three more in the second half.
How many of those games are there, playoffs or not? Four touchdown passes, four interceptions. How many of those are there?
Not many. I mean,
it's pretty crazy. I'm looking that up.
Right. You got a legendary Kelly Monday night game where he threw three in the – sort of like this. Three early against the Bengals and then threw five touchdowns.
I was there.
I think is that game. This is the playoffs, not a regular season night game against the Bengals. And so if you're looking for him to crack, all I'm saying is, you know, you might want to look somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, if he does, you know that most reports on it will be about how it was the playoffs and that made it different. Not just that they're playing a good team, because in the playoffs you pretty much only get good teams. But it'll have some story will be written everywhere about like why it was nerves. I don't know. Maybe. Doubt it. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, Football Friday. Thanks for your call, John. This is WGR.